So let's pray. Lord, I ask that you open the 21st chapter of Genesis to us and let it talk to us about our own lives tonight, as well as we look at Abraham and all his family and all that's going on there. I pray that you would open that up to us and give us revelation for ourselves in Jesus' name. Amen. This is the 12th week that we have done Abraham, and we've covered through chapters 12 to 20, and we're starting on chapter 21 tonight. And I want to read the first 7 verses just so that whoever picks up a CD at least knows where we're at. So I'll read the first 7 verses, and then we'll come back to it in a little bit. The Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did to Sarah as he had promised. And Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age at the time of which God had spoken to him. Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore him, Isaac. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. And Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh over me. And she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would suckle children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. We watched this from the time that he came out of the Chaldean, of the Chaldeans, and moved, and that was 25 years. We've covered 25 years. And I want to kind of reiterate a couple things. What is the complex issue and problem of Abraham's existence? Because it's like the umbrella that covers everything. What is that issue that he has in terms of his existence? And it has to do with his personal fulfillment and who he is, his identity and his purpose. Anybody know what they are? The land and a child. The land had to do with, he had to have a place in life. And God promised him a new place as he moved from Ur of the Chaldeans. That's the first thing, the land. And we looked at that in chapter 15 or 16, I'm not sure which it was, I think it was 16, where he had this religious experience with God, and they sacrificed those animals, and God told him about the land. And God made a covenant with him. The second is that he has promised him a child, and that child is by Sarah, and that's his purpose, because that child is going to be the father of many nations, going to bless the world, the earth over a period of time, and that's what he has been promised. So the issue of Abraham's life has to do with a place where he needs to be and a purpose in terms of his future. So those are the promises and the issues that Abraham deals with, and it goes on through here. What we're seeing right here in those 7 verses is the culmination of the promised child. Now, the reason I bring this up is because Abraham is a good picture to use in terms of all the things that we walk through with him, and I'm not going to go all through those things, but the different things that he encountered in terms of his life, the different issues that he fought in terms of his life. And the reason I bring this up is because if you're just studying the Bible, that's like eating straw as far as I'm concerned. But I look for the ways in which, how is this going to affect my life or be in my life? So the question that I ask you, and this has to do with your self-understanding, and self-understanding is really important. What is your issues? I did that study several years ago on the issues of life, and we looked at 5 different issues in terms of people falls into it, but what makes you tick? I mean, when it comes to your hungers or your fears in life or the things that cause you embarrassment or things like that, what is your issue? Self-understanding is tremendously important. And in looking at the story of Abraham, we see that his issue had to do with a place where he was supposed to be as a person. And that has to do with your identity and who you are. And that place was the land that God promised him. And the other thing has to do with your purpose in life. Why are you here? And I'm not sure that it's God that asked that question of it. I think it may be just life asked that question. Why are you here? What's your purpose in being here? And these have to do with your issues and the things that make you tick. And so we're looking at Abraham here, and this is the culmination. This is 25 years we've been walking with him, and this child is now born. And it is important to God and to Abraham because through this child is going to be the salvation of the world. Because through this child, Isaac, comes the bloodline, the genealogy down to 2,000 years ago with Jesus being born to Mary. And we need to understand that this is God's, what he's dealing with as he's dealing with people just like you and me. He is working out the salvation of the world through Abraham and Sarah. Now, in order to do that, he also deals with real people. You got to take them out of the stained glass. You got to take them out of church. And you got to start thinking like they're just like us in reality. I mean, they have the same kinds of things going on in their lives that we do. The only difference is the technology. And what is important to Gabe? Or to Abraham, what is important to God? Well, he wants this child to be the destiny to bring in salvation into the world. He's got to redeem the world because we lost it in Eden. But for Abraham, he gets to see a lot of revelation that God gives him, but the question has to do I have a place in this world? Do I have a purpose in this world? And it manifests through the land that God promises and the child. Now, another reason why we look at Abraham and this study is God works on people. God teaches people. He shapes us. He works on us. He'll sneak up on us and he'll deal with us. And the way that he usually deals with us is through our issues. The thing that makes us tick, you know, I guarantee you, if you're a man and you have a profession, more than likely that's how you identify yourself, and it probably has to do with your purpose. Well, guess what? If God wants to get your attention or if he wants to shape you, you know where he's going to do it? Right where it matters. If you're a woman and it has to do with your children, guess where he's going to do it? He's going to do it right through your kids. Yeah, whatever this, I did a series called Christ-Centered Living in Church, and those things had to do with possessions and whatever you put at the center of your life. It could be possessions, could be money, could be your profession, could be a person. I even had one on enemies. Could be your enemies. I don't know if you've seen the movie The Princess Bride, but Inigo Montoya has an issue in his life. And it is to find that six-fingered man to kill him because you killed my father. Prepare to die. And he would do that. And you know what? In that movie, at the end, when he kills that guy, he loses his meaning. All you have to do is watch it. He says, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself now. Because he lost the issue of his life. Anyway, that's where God works on us. Now, I don't know what your issue is. I don't walk in your shoes. I don't know what makes you tick, but I do know this. Self-understanding is tremendously important to find out how is God going to work on me, or in what areas is he going to look and deal with me? Because that's where he shapes you. That's where he teaches you. That's where he will discipline you as well. Now, self-understanding is not easily found because we are very good at deceiving ourselves. We deal in deception all the time, you know, And we will lie to ourselves. It's not so much what we do to other people. Some people can see through us, but we will deceive ourselves. So, what's your issue? What is it that makes you tick? I think in some ways God created the earth just to train the faithful. I pretty much figured this out. You know, I look at my life personally. I take tours in people's lives, and so I'm always dealing with people in terms of how they work. But I also know the human side of myself. I know what my desires are. I know where my hungers have been. I know where my fears are and what those things are. And I try not to deceive myself or lie to myself about these things. And one of the things that God does with us, he works on us through our lives. We've been walking with Abraham. God has been working in that man for 25 years that we have been studying over the last 3 or 4 months. And I know this as well. If you walk it in our lives, some things get resolved as we go. Do they not? I've found that through life, some things just get resolved as we walk it and how things work. And I watch how God has worked on me, how he's shaped me, how he's taught me over the years. And some things get worked out as we go. And through life. Some don't, I know that. But God works there. That's where he works on us. And he deals with us. The other thing about this story is that Abraham lived a regular life in a lot of ways. God talked to him in certain places, and Abraham said, "Okay, I'll do that," or "I'll do that," or you know, and he would do those things. But there was a lot of things that happened in his life that as he went that God really didn't tell him what to do. He just did them. He lived. You know, he had his family business that he did, and he had the household things that were going on. So that brings me, there's another thing that we deal with in our lives. What's your agenda for life? Probably has to do with your issue if you really get back in. What's your agenda? And right beside that, what's God's agenda for your life? And pondering that, because one of the things that is happening here is that God has an agenda for Abraham's life and in terms of his purpose and his identity. Abraham is thinking really as a man in his own little universe. He says, "I need a place to live, and I need some kind of purpose for living." And it has to do with that land and that child. And God has told him that, you know, this is what I'm going to do for you and all this stuff. And Abraham is also walking as God's friend. God favors Abraham. I don't know why him and not other people. I think part of it is really about his obedient spirit. His heart was right towards God. Because if you notice here in the story, when he does the dumb things, God's really not involved at that point in time in his life. It's not that God isn't around him. He is. But he chooses to do these things by himself. But when God appears or gets in the place where he gives him direction, he says, "Okay, I'm going to do it." And he follows through on it. And I think that that's part of what is. He gets onto God's agenda whenever it comes up in the midst of his life. So, this is where we're walking. Now, in chapter 21, we have the culmination of the promise being born. So I just want to read to you, and we're going to walk through this chapter. The Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did to Sarah as he had promised, and Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age at the time of which God had spoken to him. Now, there's a few things you need to take note of in these verses, because you can just read them And you say, okay, so there was a birth of a child. Okay. It says here, the Lord did to Sarah as he had promised. When did he promise that? He promised that back in chapter 18 when they were in the tent and God came to visit Abraham. And he did as he promised. He also says in here that he visited Sarah as he had said he would, which was he told her, this is when I'm going to show up, and that's when she conceived and bore. And the other thing about this is that, and he bore Abraham a son in his old age at the time of which God had spoken to him. Now, one of the things that I have learned about life and my walk with God, and as I look at other people's lives and how things work and how God shapes people and is involved with them, is that there is a really strong understanding of God's timing of things in terms of our lives. There are times that things happen. It is the opportune time. Now, there are two words for time in the Greek language. One is chronos, which we get a chronometer, and I'm wearing a chronometer, and if I run over, they'll know. That's chronological time. But there's another time called kairos, and that is the opportune time, the perfect time, the right time. And this is what is happening in terms of Abraham at this time. You know, he's had this promise for 25 years, and after it's all over, in his old age, God works. In God's timing of things. And we need to learn God's ways. And one of the ways that you learn how God works in this world and how he manages things is you learn about his timing and things. And when it comes to the timing of things in your life and things, this means you have to also develop a sense of, okay, what's going on here behind the humanity of the situation. And you have to begin to think, okay, what is God doing in the midst of this? And what's his timing in terms of how this is supposed to unfold in this person's life? Now, I've learned this over the years because I'm old and advanced in years, and I've been walking with him a long time. And I didn't learn that at the front end of the thing. It just takes time. But it's in this particular two or three verses, it says, in his old age, God did what he was supposed to do at that particular time. What I'm doing here is book learning. Now, I majored in chemistry in college, and we had book learning classes on physical chemistry, organic chemistry, and everything. But after you have all the book learning, then we have to go to lab and do the experiments. And one of the things I know is this is book learning here, folks. But living your life is where lab takes place. And that's where you apply what you learn in the book learning to your life situations and the life situations of other people. And it is so hard to figure out God's timing of things unless you let God say, okay, what's God's agenda here? What are we going to do here in terms of this? And this, we're seeing this happen right now in the 21st chapter of Genesis, that God did what he said he would do, and he did what he promised he would do. But it took 25 years. And waiting is a hard thing to learn, too, about how God works in our lives. And it has to do with more than just you. And that's also important. Verses 3 and 4. Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore him, Isaac. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Now, right there in these two verses, he names this kid Laughter. That's what Isaac means. It means laughter. Now, God had really told him what to call him back in chapter 18, verse 15. Let me read it to you. There's a couple of, you have to kind of go back here. The reason that his name Laughter is because both Abraham and Sarah essentially denied the possibility of this kind of stuff happening. And this is ludicrous. This is impossible. Verse 15 of 18, but Sarah denied. She said, I did not laugh, for she was afraid. He said, and God said, no, but you did laugh. Because it's so ludicrous that God could actually work in this way. It's kind of like the resurrection. It's ludicrous if you think about it. Look at chapter 17, verses 17 through 19. Then Abraham fell on his face and laughed. And if you read up above it, he says, I'm going to bless Sarah, your wife, and she's going to conceive and have a child. Then in verse 17, then Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said to himself, shall a child be born to a man who is 100 years old? Shall Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? And Abraham said to God, oh, that Ishmael might live in thy sight. And God said, no, but Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. So in this place, this is where God is obedient to God. He said, he and Sarah could have sat down and says, you know, Isaac, I don't want to call the kid Laughter. Let's call him something else. Let's call him George or something like that. But no, Abraham, once again, is obedient to God because God said, you call him Isaac. It's important to understand that. Now, in his obedience, Abraham, he names him Isaac, which means laughter, which has to do with the ludicrousness of the whole situation. How could this ever happen? And he does it in covenant. And that has to do with purpose. He circumcises him when he's 8 years old. We talk about circumcision back when God told him that this was going to be his sign or covenant between he and Abraham. And circumcision has to do with our identity and our creativity. And that's where he says, I'm going to strike covenant with you, Abraham, at that place, which is your place of creativity and your place of identity of who you are. And so he does that. And so what he does, he follows through in this covenant relationship because this is God's covenant. This is not just a covenant. This is God's covenant. And he strikes covenant with him at the place of identity and creativity of Isaac. So Abraham does these things. He's obedient. Now, we know that Abraham's just a guy, just a human being like most of us, because he does stupid stuff. You know, I mean, you could call it sin, and I guess it is a sin against Sarah, but, you know, God had told Abraham, this is what really amazes me about Abraham at times. He is so much like us. God talks to him, basically gives him the revelation. I am going to have a child who is going to be the promise of salvation for the world around you, and it's going to come through this child, and that child is going to be born by Sarah. He tells Abraham that, and what does Abraham do right after this happens? He goes and gets involved with this guy named Abimelech and in the Philistine countries, and he essentially sends her down the river. Says, you take my wife. What? Didn't God just tell you that you're going to have the child of promise through Sarah, not through anybody else, through Sarah, and you're selling her down the river like a piece of chattel? What's wrong with you, Abraham? You're stupid. You're an idiot. At which point, if I was Sarah, I'd take a frying pan and hit him over the head with it. Wake up, you idiot. But, you know, the other side of that, though, is he's an obedient man. When God says something, he does it. So here he is, and here it is in verse 5. It's in his old age. It's in his old age. And Abraham circumcised his son. Verse 5, Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. Oh, that's old. I would say this, about the time I'm holding a child of mine at the ripe old age of just where I am right now, I'd say I'm too old for this. I don't know about other people, but I'd say, ooh, I don't think I need this right now. But anyway, at a ripe old age, he does this. If you don't laugh, you're going to cry. Verses 6 and 7. And Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh over me. And she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would suckle children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. Notice she doesn't refer to her own age. She refers to Abraham. But that's just a side note. Which brings me to the broader picture here. There is more than one person involved in God's will in all this. Okay? Abraham is the one who is the point of the main revelation and promise that God has given. He's the one that God talks to in terms of the big picture. But everybody in this story has a place and a purpose. And I think we need to understand this because everybody in this room, everybody in your family, everybody you know, God is working in people's lives. He's working in your life, but he's working in people's lives that you live with, that you work with. Everybody in this story has a place and a purpose. Abraham may be the main guy with the revelation, okay? He's the one that is in terms of that. But Sarah is the vessel. And she's also in this story. And what we need to learn about this, we live lives that are connected to other lives. And they are living out their purpose in God's plans as well. And you may be responsible for some of them, if they're children or things like that, or you may be responsible for them in your workplace or something in some form or fashion, but we live lives that are connected to other lives, and God is working in everybody's life in different ways and with different amounts of revelation concerning their lives as well. But they're living out their purpose in God's plan. If you think about this story, at this point in time, Abraham is the father of the faith. He's the main holder of the revelation, but Sarah is the vessel. But you also have Hagar involved in this. And Hagar was the maidservant by which Sarah said, this is the way we're going to get kids. You go to Hagar and have sex with her, and we'll get a kid out of that. And Abraham said, okay. And what does he do? He does it. And it was Sarah's idea, but it was Abraham's fault, if you remember that story. It was Sarah's idea, but it was Abraham's fault. But, so you have Hagar. Hagar, God is working his purpose out in her life as well, and Ishmael as well as now Isaac and Sarah and Abraham. Plus, if you think about it, he's got a bunch of shepherds or people that work for him, Abraham does. He just came out of this the Philistine area, basically I think it's down where Gaza is now, where Abimelech was the chief guy. He wasn't a king, but he was close to that in terms of that area. He was the king of his own life. But he was down there with Abimelech, and he almost sold Sarah down the river. But God is working in Abimelech's life. Do you remember what he did? God came to Abimelech in a dream and said, you don't mess with this woman or I'll kill you. That's what he said. It's right there in Scripture. And Abimelech said, well, don't do that, God. I'm a righteous dude. And God basically said this, I know you're a righteous dude. Therefore, I'm not giving you the warning. Don't mess with this woman. So God is working in Abimelech's life as well. Now, you and I am the star. I'm the main actor in my movie. You are the main actor, the star in your life story movie. And I may have a part to play in your life, and you might have a part to play in my life, but I'm still the star. So are you. And it's like I have my own life universe here, and God works with me in terms of how I live my life. But then he also is involved in your life, in your story. And just as we look at this story, there's a lot of people involved here, and we live lives that are connected. And we need to keep this always in front of us, because I know that sometimes I get involved with a person, and I know that I am supposed to be, essentially the guru for them at that moment in terms of giving them some kind of spiritual direction. I don't know what that means for them necessarily, but I may be the person given the direction, and I'm playing a part in their life story. Because God he's involved in their life as well, and there's a purpose in God's plan for them as well. And if you look at this, the big agenda Abraham has revelation on, which is the salvation of the world. But there's a lot of little revelations and agendas going on as well here. In verses 6 and 7, she says, I am filled with joy. Sarah does. I am fulfilled. Everything is good in God's purposes for Abraham and Sarah at that point. That's exactly what verses 6 and 7 are talking about. God has made laughter for me. He has brought me to joy and fulfillment. So the purpose for Abraham and Sarah and Isaac is coming to fruition. Okay? But there's always trouble in paradise. So you have a moment here in Abraham and Sarah's life when the culmination of everything comes into focus here, and there's a conjunction of stars, you might say, with the birth of Isaac. And that goes on. But remember that Hagar's still in the household, so is Ishmael. And all that happened, and that happened several chapters ago, and that's been going on now for probably 10, 12 years. Verses 8 and 9. And the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. Well, he's probably what, girls? Year and a half? 2 years? When they start getting teeth, you want to wean them as soon as you can. Anyway, he was weaned, so he's probably year-ish, whatever. But so that's between verses 7 and 8 is 1 year. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian. We remember her? Abraham, it's your fault. It might have been Sarah's idea, but it's your fault. She had born to Abraham, playing with her son Isaac. Now, anybody have a different translation than that? Because this is one of those places where you have to sometimes look at the original language and look at some of the other translations, because we have so many different ones. Anybody have something different from playing with Isaac? Yeah, what do you got? Mocking? Mocking is one of those terms that is used. Or teasing? You could say he was playing with. I've played with people. And basically, I'm messing with them. I can play with you. I know how to mess with you. And so what happens here is Sarah sees Ishmael teasing the kid, okay? Now, the Revised Standard Version, which I use, does not show this, but it has to do with teasing more, I think, more than mocking even, but whatever he was doing, it was distasteful to Sarah. Got it? And remember, if you remember the story, there's a lot going on here. There's a lot of undercurrents in this household because you've got Hagar and Ishmael because God told her to go back there and live with them. And so you've got Hagar and her son Ishmael, who is by Abraham, living with Sarah. And now Isaac is involved in this. And so you've got two women here that are going to be at each other's throats, you might say. There's trouble in paradise, even though fulfillment has happened. She is probably jealous for her son's position, Sarah is. There's probably resentment and vengeance and jealousy that may be involved in this by both women. Sarah started this, made the mistake. She started this, but it was Abraham's fault. Let me go back to chapter 16 and read it to you. See, this is, you know, we do church and we talk about this stuff, but the fact of the matter is, this is real life stuff. I mean, it is stuff right out of what you watch on TV. Now, Sarah, Abram's wife, bore him no children. She had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar. And Sarah, I said to Abram, behold, now the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go into my maid. It may be that I shall obtain children by her. And Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarai. That means, okay, I'll do that. So Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan. Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar the Egyptian, her maiden, gave her to Abraham, her husband, as a wife. And he went in to Hagar. She conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt on her mistress. Bad blood, man. Sarai said to Abraham, may the wrong done to me be on you. It's my idea, but it's your fault, Abe. I gave my maid to your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, she looked on me with contempt. May the Lord judge between you and me. But Abraham said to Sarah, behold, your maid is in your power. Do to her as you please. Then Sarah dealt harshly with her, and she fled from her. And she went out, and then God talked to Hagar and sent her back into the place. Okay? So here we have a year and a half old Isaac and a lot of old bad bloods coming up here in the midst of this. Remember, Abraham is the revelation of God, how salvation comes in the world, but he's just a guy. He's human. He's obedient in his heart to God. Sarah is the vessel that is going to carried Isaac. But she is motivated by her flesh and all these things that come up in her, jealousy, resentment, all that stuff. And Hagar is still there. We don't know how that went, but it's been 10 years or so. And how that relationship was, I bet it was always kind of dicey, demilitarized zone kind of thing. And remember that God is working. And he is involved in his agenda in all these people's lives. All of them. They're all players. So, verse 10 and 11. So she said to Abraham, cast out this slave woman with your son, for the son of this slave woman shall not be heir with my son Isaac. Boy, I can see this happening. She's spitting fire at that point in time. And the thing was very displeasing to Abraham on account of his son. Now, it doesn't say which son, but I'm here to tell you, this is Ishmael that they're talking about. Now, this story is really about Abraham because he's the one who carries the main revelation. He's the one with the most revelation. He's the one that is favored by God. He is God's friend. The plan is working out through him. But I'm here to tell you that everybody's a player in this. And Abe is displeased. Why is he displeased? Because his flesh, son, the son of his flesh, is the one that he cares about. And there's a picture there. One of the things that happens with us is God may point out something to you. He says, I have a purpose for your life, and it needs to unfold this way. And we'll say, but can I keep this part of my life with me? I don't want to lose that part of my life. And it's the part that comes out of our flesh, and it comes out of our world. And you know what God said to Abraham? He said, sure, you can do that. He didn't tell him to throw him away. He said, you can keep it. And this is why he is displeased, because he is his firstborn son. He is the child of his flesh. And we don't know. He may have even loved Hagar. We don't know, because we aren't given that particular picture, as well as Sarah. But we know that Hagar's involved in this. Isaac's involved in this. Ishmael's involved in this. Sarah's involved in this. So I want to ask you a question. Anybody here have any family problems? That's a rhetorical question. I don't ask for hands, because more than likely 90% of us would raise our hands. The rest of us are just born by ourselves. Have any family problems? Do you have any confusing relationships going on in the context of your life? Life is complex. Have you figured that out? It's complicated. And we all have different relationships with people around us. We have issues, do we not, with people? But and tough as it is tough to deal with family problems and family issues and family relationships and family personalities. I know that, okay? And, of course, we're not the problem, are we? We could be to somebody else. But it's tough to deal with. And we are watching God working out his will in the midst of all these other people's lives and his agenda. We have seen Abraham's weaknesses. We've seen how he has been driven by his fears and his hunger, because it was a famine in the land, and that's what drove him out of there, down to Egypt. We also know that he is God's friend, because God had told him that. Nobody in this whole story has the revelation of God that he has. You might say he's higher up on the mountain than Sarah and Hagar and Ishmael and anybody else, the shepherds around him. He's up there on top of the mountain. He can see more because God put him up high. And in the midst of all these family issues that are reoccurring right here, and I don't think they're reoccurring. I think this is just the expression that happens now with this new kid in the house and all that goes with it. So what does God do? He talks to Abraham. But God said, verse 12, but God said to Abraham, be not displeased because of the lad and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you, for through Isaac shall your descendants be named. And I will make a nation of the son of the slave woman also, because he is your offspring. So what is this? God is talking to Abraham. He's not talking to Sarah about this or Hagar. He says, God says, Abraham, I know that this is upsetting to you, but you got to listen to Sarah at this point, because in the big scheme of things, this is what's going on here. In other words, God has his reasons, and he tells him this, and he's the only one he tells him this. And Abraham is obedient to it. That's one thing, you got to keep that in mind, obedience. God, I mean, if God says do it, he does it. That's just the way he is, because he's pure in heart. He's single-minded in this. I mean, to a fault. And God is saying, this has to be cleaned up right now. This child of promise is the one that I'm going to work the salvation of the world through, not your child by the flesh, but the child of promise. And Abraham, assured of God's will, he resigns himself to the loss of Ishmael. But you notice what God also says, I will make a nation of the son of the slave woman also, because he is your offspring. He is God's friend. Because he is your offspring, I'm going to make a nation of him. But you got to let him go. You got to let that part of your life go. Verse 14. So Abraham rose early in the morning. When it says he rose early in the morning, I always think about this because God's talking to him. He probably didn't get a whole lot of sleep that night anyway. This would probably be stirring on him something fierce. And he took bread and a skin of water and gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder along with the child and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. Now, I've talked about this in the past, and I'll tell you this very quickly. The two witnesses of God are grace and truth. The two witnesses that are referred to in the book of Revelation in chapter, 12 or whatever it is, are basically Israel and the church, the body of Christ in the world. The two witnesses in terms of physical things are water and fire. That's grace and truth, Revelation. Or bread and wine, which we do for communion. Because the bread is like the manna from heaven. It is grace. And the grapes, which make wine, which is fire water, is the other sign, the other witness. There are several different ways in which is the witness. But I want you to notice that if you don't know about this stuff, you'll never pick up on this. But notice what Abraham does here. Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water. What did he give her? Grace. There is no revelation in that at all. He gave her nothing but grace. And he sent her away with grace. He did not give her any revelation as to why she was being sent away outside of what you can see in terms of the humanity of the situation. Abraham knows why he has to send her away. And this has to do with the pictures of the witnesses. And all he does is he gives her grace, but he doesn't give her any truth whatsoever in terms of this. Now, in Galatians chapter 4, verses 21 to 31, there is... Paul is doing a sermon illustration, an allegory based upon Hagar and all that goes with that. But it's a sermon about the difference between these two witnesses are water and wine, but it's also flesh, your flesh, my flesh, and spirit. Because the spirit is the fire that comes within us. And he does an allegorical speech. Sermon basically on that, and I'm not going to get into that and read that particular thing, but I want to point it out to you because this is what's going on here, is this particular place where Abraham sends her away with nothing but the grace of bread and water. Verses 15 to 21, when the water in the skin was gone, I mean the grace ran out, she cast the child under one of the bushes. Then she went and sat down over against him a good way off, about the distance of a bow shot. For she said, let me not look upon the death of the child. And as she sat over against him, the child lifted up his voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the lad. And the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, what troubles you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad, and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make him a great nation. Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water, and she went and filled the skin with water and gave the lad a drink. Water represents grace. And God was with the lad, and he grew up, and he lived in the wilderness and became an expert with the bow. He lived in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. Now, in these, they're physical pictures of spiritual truths here, and you got to kind of pick up. God heard the boy's crying. He heard him. So what we know from that is, as I said before, God's involved with Hagar's life as well. God is involved with Abraham's firstborn son as well. So God is involved. And if you take a look at your own life around you, you need to always remember that God is doing things in the midst of all these people's lives that are around us. And it's not just about me all the time. So God is involved. Let's say you have purpose. God has shown you purpose, revelation in terms of your life. It may not be the big picture like Abraham's God, but he's given you a picture, a revelation for your life. Well, that may be the main revelation in your life, but there's other people around you who get, God speaks to them. God's working in them the same way. There are parts of God's purpose in all peoples, in everybody's life, from me standing up here to John Doe out on the street. God is involved. There are parts of God's purpose in everybody's life. And what is God? So one of the things that I do, and this is a matter of not only paying attention, but it's actually trying to look with some spiritual eyes in terms of what is God doing in this person's life that I know, and I see some things that are happening. I ask those questions, and I'm conscious of the fact that God is involved in your life, my life, everybody's life. And he may be working on you right now in this particular Bible study to wake you up into a certain thing and give you a revelation or something. I don't know, but I do know this, that God heard the cry of that child and God spoke to Hagar. She didn't have all the revelation that Abraham has in terms of the entire world, but he says, that child is going to grow up. You take care of that child now, Hagar. That's part of her purpose in terms of her life. Also, another thing, a physical picture of a spiritual truth. He lived in the wilderness. His mother took a wife from him from the land of Egypt. Egypt is always a picture of the world. So what she did was she found him a girl, and that girl came out of the world. It had nothing to do with God's basic purposes in terms of how life works. So Hagar finds favor in God's sight. Why is this happening? Why is it happening for Hagar? Why was Lot saved from Sodom and Gomorrah? Because of Abraham. Right? This means yes. That's how it happened. Well, why is Hagar being treated like this? If you look back at verses 12 and 13, God said to Abram, be not displeased because of the lad and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you, for through Isaac shall your descendants be named. I will make a nation of the son of the slave woman also because he is your offspring. So in other words, this revelation that comes to Hagar is once again goes back to the favor that God has with Abraham. And let me tell you, Abraham is favored by God because he is obedient to whatever God tells him to do. And it's because of Abraham's request for Ishmael that Hagar and Ishmael have a life. I mean, this is it. This is important stuff to see in this, because most of the time we just read this stuff. Then let me read verses 22 to 24. At that time, Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, said to Abraham, God is with you in all that you do. Now, therefore, swear to me here by God that you will not deal falsely with me or with my offspring or with my posterity, but as I have dealt loyally with you, you will deal with me and with the land where you have sojourned. And Abraham said, I will swear. Now, if you take these verses actually right here, from 22 down to the end of the chapter, you could almost stick them before chapter 21, right at the end of chapter 20, because it's Abimelech again. Well, Abimelech is where he almost sold Sarah down the river, but Abimelech, God talked to him. He's a heathen out there in the world, or you know, but he talked to him and says, don't mess with Abraham because he is a prophet. He is God's man. He is a righteous dude. And so Abimelech says, okay, I'm not messing with him. And he figured it out. God gave Abimelech the revelation that Abraham was a holy man who God favored. So in this little ditty right after Hagar's out there in the wilderness, this is something that really ought to belong back before chapter 21 starts. Abimelech is saying, I'm not messing with this guy. I want to make sure that I'm in a righteous relationship with Abraham in terms of that because I want to be okay. And he realizes the relationship that Abraham has with God, and he says, God is with you in all that you do. Thou therefore swear to me here by God that you will not deal falsely with me. In other words, he says, I'm not going to mess with you, Abraham, because God might just take me out, because he already told me he would. Then verses 25 to 20. You know, Abimelech's revelation was he's a prophet. God's hand is on this guy. Don't mess with him. And he doesn't have the big picture either. Abimelech doesn't. He only has a little revelation that God gives him. Kind of like all of us in certain ways. We get our revelation, but we don't get a lot. We may not get what somebody else has. Verses 25 to the end. When Abraham complained to Abimelech about a well of water which Abimelech's servants had seized, Abimelech said, I do not know who has done this thing. You did not tell me, and I have not heard of it until today. In other words, there's a fight over a well. So Abraham took sheep and oxen, gave them to Abimelech, and the two men made a covenant, a contract, basically, at that point. Abraham set 7 ewe lambs of the flock apart. And Abimelech said to him, what is the meaning of these 7 ewe lambs which you have set apart? And he said, these 7 ewe lambs you will take from my hand that you may be a witness for me that I dug this well. In other words, Abraham is saying, these lambs here are going to be the sign to you. I dug this well that you guys seized from my people. And I want to make you to witness this. Basically, it was a deed that they were doing. Therefore, that place was called Beersheba because there both of them swore an oath. And Beersheba means the well of 7 or the well of the oath, and that's what that means. So they made a covenant at Beersheba. Then Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, rose up and returned to the land of the Philistines. That's down in Gaza area. Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba and called there on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. In other words, in planting the tree, he's done what he's done before. Wherever he went, he would make an altar. He was an altar builder. He said, I'm dedicating this place to God. And that's what it is. And that's what he was doing there by planting that tree. And Abraham sojourned many days in the land of the Philistines. This well problem. Anyway, this is the well at Beersheba, okay? Once again, if you look back at Hagar's life, and this is where he says, if you entertain a righteous man or woman, you get a righteous man's reward. That's what Jesus said. Well, what is that? Well, that has to do with God's favor and grace. Same place he talked about a prophet, too, and that's sight. Anyway, he gets this well. He says, and that is his. Well, if you look back up in verses 15 to 21, it says, then God opened her eyes, verse 19, her eyes, that's Hagar, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the skin with water and gave the lad a drink. And God was with the lad, and this water is like grace, and he grew up and he lived in the wilderness. He lived in the wilderness of Paran. By the way, that well is in Beersheba, because in verse 14 up above, she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. So in other words, even when it came to the water from the well, it was Abraham's well that God gave grace to Hagar. And so Abe is still grace to her over that well. And we'll stop right here. And next week we're going to have a time of prayer and worship here. And in 2 weeks from tonight, we will get to the place where it says this. After these things, God tested Abraham. And what are these things? Well, there's 25 years of them. And we'll be looking at that in 2 weeks, okay? Let's pray. Lord, I ask that, that all of us here would get some revelation from this for our own lives, and maybe also to be aware enough to kind of look around and see that maybe it isn't all just about me, but it might be about the people around me as well. And that you work in their lives as well. So I ask that you would give us the revelation we need for our lives in Jesus' name. Amen.